The committee will come to order. Members, please take your seats. We do have a quorum, so we're ready to go. Representative Wardlow, would you care to move the minutes of the last meeting for February 9th?
Certainly, so move.
Representative Wardlow moves the minutes of February 9th. Any discussion about the minutes? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes approved. All right, we have two bills on the agenda today. They're very similar. It's my intention that we move both bills out of this committee, and we want to give both of them a full hearing. We're going to start with Representative Leader's bill, as his committee is also meeting this morning, and he has some time constraints. Representative Leader. Representative Doty will move your bill.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Doty.
I move that the committee pass House File 533 and refer it to Finance Committee.
All right. Representative Doty moves the bill. Representative Leader, do you have an author's amendment to get the bill in the shape you would like it?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, we have a delete all amendment to House File 533. And that's the one I believe that you have, Mr. Chair, that's distributed. That's the one we'd like to work from.
Is this the AO7-0044 amendment? Is
that's correct, Mr. Chair. Okay.
Representative Doty, would you like to move the amendment?
Mr. Chair, I move the amendment as presented.
Any discussion on the amendment? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment is adopted. Okay, Representative Leader, would you like to tell us about your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, this House File 33 is a veterans educational benefit bill, and what the bill does, it describes who is a veteran and the eligibility requirements, and it provides educational opportunities for these eligible or qualified veterans, and that explains in the bill. And Mr. Chair, I will go through just a quick summary. We do have some testifiers in support which would speak on the bill. Basically, the definition, it applies to veterans of the armed services, whether a National Guard, Reserve, or active duty. And they had to serve in the time period from August 2nd, 1990 up to this time, or they could still be in the active service. To be a qualified veteran, Minnesota statutes indicate what is a veteran, but this goes a little bit further as far as the eligibility for educational benefits. It's a requirement that they have to serve at least 90 days in a hostile area or hostile territory, and a hostile territory is described as one by presidential order or a proclamation, and it's also those hostile areas in case there were any awards or decorations. And it also has to be, it also provides for a veteran that would be disabled or honorably discharged, and also to their surviving spouse in the case of a deceased veteran that was killed under these conditions, the spouse and their children. And it provides for educational benefits in a public institution in the state of Minnesota for, and I have to back up, these veterans had to be Minnesota residents as defined by statute, and also they would have to been in the Minnesota residence prior to the their enlistment or their term in the military service. What the bill provides, it would give educational benefits for a period of 8 semesters or a total of 128 credits. And that eligibility remains, and they'd have to exhaust their other educational benefits under federal or state grants and other military educational benefits. And basically, that's about the bill. It's effective on July 1st, 2007. That'd be this coming July. That's the effective provisions. I think, Mr. Chair, unless there's some questions, I can comment some further, but we do have some testifiers in behalf of the bill.
Any quick questions from members? Okay, let's go to testifiers then. Representative Leader.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Harry Sieben. I'm from Hastings. I'm retired from the Minnesota National Guard, and I used to be a member of this body long before any of you folks were here, I guess, except Jim. enjoyed my service here very much.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. First of all, I want to thank the legislature for the great work, great advances it has made for members of the military, and members, including members of the National Guard especially, and veterans of the military. You've done great things in recent years, and things that I wish that we would have done when I was here, and we should have done when I was here for that matter, but you've done great things, so thank you very much. Governor Plenty's administration has supported and pushed and pursued benefits that have been very, very helpful to members of the military, especially the National Guard. And the National Guard, of course, being a state force as well as a federal force, the governor is the commander-in-chief. And I want to thank the Attorney General, Lori Swanson, for and her staff for identifying an additional need, a part of the benefit package of federal and state government that cannot be fully utilized now without changes. The federal legislation, the GI Bill, provides up to 36 months, 3 years, or 4 years, of 48 months, of benefits. But many people, when released from active duty, many people in our society, whether in the military or not, they don't go straight to college, or they don't get through in 4 years. I think it's at the University of Minnesota, it's probably less than the norm to get through in 4 years. And people many times are not able to fully utilize the GI Bill, the federal GI Bill that is available. This proposal extends the benefits, extends it for quite a bit, and allows people that have exhausted some of the other federal benefits, federal and state benefits, to get educational benefits, to get up to the cost of tuition and fees at the University of Minnesota, and use it at the U of M or at other institutions as well. I don't know what the fiscal note on this is. I'm told it's about, it could be about $15 million a year. You folks got a budget now of, I think it's over $30 billion, as I recall reading in the paper. I remember it was only $1 billion. Or even less. But this fills a need. Many people won't use it, won't qualify for it, but some of the needy ones will qualify for it. It does not take away any of the great benefits that you've already given to members of the military or veterans of the military, and especially the good set of benefits you've created for members of the Minnesota National Guard. So, thank you.
Mr. Chair, if I may.
Representative Leader.
I neglected to point out that basically this this bill has been in the Senate as the other. There are two bills that are actually moving or were moving in the Senate, and this delete all amendment is kind of a composition that, or compiling of both of those as passed out of committee in the Senate. And I neglected to say that. And also I should say that General Sieben and myself do not qualify, so I don't have any interest in the bill other than passing it for veterans.
Okay. Bernie wouldn't tell me what war he was in.
I think, Mr. Chair, I think it was the War of 1812. I think we served together.
We have further testimony, unless there's some questions from
General Sieben. Any questions from members?
Mr. Chair, I have a litany of questions, but I would like to probably hear the testifiers first.
Okay. Representative Dominguez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one question. Does this go retroactive to service individuals that have served already?
It's effective for service people that were in since August 2nd, 1990, if you qualify with the other requirements. That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Anything further? Okay. Representative Leader, you have another testifier?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Benjamin Wogslin. I am the Assistant Director of Communications and Research for the Attorney General's Office.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. We've got in front of us today House File 533, which, as Representative Leader said, was a compromise that was worked out in it represents a compromise that was worked out in the Senate between the governor's proposal and the attorney general's proposal. In the Senate, what they tried to do is the two senators, Senator Erickson Ropes and Senator Lynch, got together with some of the stakeholders, the governor's office and the Department of Veterans Affairs, Department of Higher Ed, and looked at what some of the best provisions of each of the bill were and tried to put together on the table the best possible package for veterans and trying to make sure that veterans are graduating. As General Sieben testified, there are certain veterans who may be slipping through the cracks, and there are holes in the federal law in that after 36 months of being in school, you may no longer qualify for the GI Bill. There are certain cases where other service members may be falling through the cracks and not being able to graduate because they don't have the money to do so. We feel that it is imperative that we make sure that we honor these folks that are coming home that have served so honorably and make sure that they are able to graduate and make sure that we as a state in Minnesota help them do so. We have two other states that have already passed similar legislation to what we're looking at today, full tuition benefits once you've exhausted the GI Bill or other state bills. That would be Illinois and Wisconsin. And the bill that the Attorney General proposed in beginning of January, I believe, models after those two programs, particularly after the Wisconsin bill. And with that, that's my testimony.
All right. Thank you. Questions from members? Representative Hawes?
I did pass out a sheet, and I think you have it. It says some questions for commissioners of Veterans Affairs, for the Director of Office of Higher Ed, or for the Attorney General still. Is that passed out? Okay. It's going to be an easier list, Representative Leader, because your amendment takes care of many of these things, and I'm very appreciative of that. That makes the list a little bit easier to go through. Let me just start at the bottom, maybe, and work my way up to the top, and people can help me out if they're fixed, because I think some of these are fixed. How would the timing of the reimbursement process work? How long would it take for a veteran to receive the reimbursement following his or her advance payment for the semester? And I think on your old bill, the payment was made not directly to the college, and I think it's made directly to the college now. Is that correct?
Representative Leader.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. And also in the event the college can't pursue a late payment, in the event that they didn't have the money, that the veteran can still go to school and they will get the payment without, if it's a late payment, that doesn't affect the eligibility of the veteran to go to pursue his continuing education at that time.
That is a wonderful fix. Thank you very much.
Representative Hawes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How many veterans are 30% or more service-connected disabled, according to the VA? The reason I ask this is we're going from 30 million to 50 million, and I think we have to know where that 20 million is, if we put it in or if we have to take it out. So that's the reason I'm asking, and it is as a financial question. The question again is, how many veterans are 30% or more service-connected disabled, according to the VA?
Representative, Mr. Chair, could I answer the question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, I believe, I think it's somewhere around 20,000. I'm not positive about that, and possibly the commissioner could speak to that. But I believe in the current bill that we have and the compromise that was reached in the Senate that they chose to go with the 100% disabled.
That would be a wonderful fix. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Yep.
Representative Severson.
Yeah, to that point then, is that to be reflected in the bill? Because we've got currently in the wording in where you've got severely disabled, but that's not defined. And I think in the bill that the governor brought forward, it was permanently and totally disabled was the definition on that. Is that one of the things that you're planning on picking up in your bill? And the reason I say that is because it does come to an issue of a fiscal note. And I think it may reduce the coverage somewhat, but I think it gets to the heart of the issue, which is if there is someone who is totally disabled, then they become eligible for these benefits, and the other is a little more squishy.
Mr. Chair, staff has a comment.
Oh, Mr. Cleary.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Severson, just for a clarification, I see the new language under this amendment on line 4.19. Does indeed refer to total and permanent disability,
okay.
not the 30% any longer.
And also, Mr. Chair, I think on page 3, line 317, is that the one you said? I'm sorry, I didn't hear the reference.
4.19.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So that change is congruent.
Yeah,
Mr. Chair, I'm reading that change then is congruent to the bill that we were working on. So obviously, if it is congruent, I'm loving it. All right, so now we're going to go to Mr. Chair.
Representative Hawes, go ahead.
Would the Department of Veterans Affairs be prepared to administer the tuition reimbursement, or do you have experience administering the large veterans? Who's going to administrate this? And I think that's fixed also.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Leader.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hawes. That's changed. It was the director of the higher education. I think in a previous bill it was the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs, but the administration of the reimbursement is through the Department of Higher Education.
That is a wonderful change. Thank you very much. Mr. Chair.
Representative Hawes.
Precludes the use of educational assistance at a private post-secondary educational institution or a cooperating reciprocal institution. Is that changed?
Representative Leader.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Hawes, basically the bill is set up for public institutions, but it allows those private institutions that it's an optional. If they want to get into it, they can get into it as long as they comply with the requirements.
Representative Hawes.
I think that's congruent to the bill that I'm proposing. Yeah. Maybe have staff help me.
Mr. Chairman.
The cow, I had to milk the cow before I worked on this, Mr. Chair, so it was early in the morning. So.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative Hawes and members, there might still be a small problem in the language with regard to that. If you look at line 2.25 of your amendment, it defines an eligible institution as a public post-secondary institution located in the state. And if you look across to the next page, line 3.28 and 3.29, for example, it requires each post-secondary public institution in the state to participate, but it allows each private post-secondary institution to participate. So perhaps there needs to be a little amendment at some point on line 2.25 to broaden that.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Leader.
If I may ask, I'm a little at a loss at your name and I know you.
Yes.
Sorry. Sure. But basically the qualifications are in that federal Title IV, and because there might be some problem there, could you recommend a slight change, sir?
I'd be happy to. Could we do that for the next round after this?
Mr. Chair, I don't
Representative Leader.
We could do that as if the bill were to pass and move forward. That'd be fine. Okay. And I could check with you.
Mr. Chair, I would be very happy with that as an approach.
Okay. Representative Hawes, anything further?
Yes, I'm working my way up the list. Sorry, but these are important issues, and as you can see, most of them now have been taken care of in the amendment, which is making me very happy. Excludes veterans who have served neither in a war zone for 90 days nor for over 2 years total in federal active service unless they are medically discharged. If so, what groups would be excluded and compared to, as compared to the House File 162, which is the other bill that's running? This is a policy choice. I just want you to comment on it.
Representative Lee.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hawes, I believe that the bill applies to a veteran that perhaps was not in a hostile zone if they had served in the National Guard Reserves or Armed Forces for 16 years. Isn't that correct? I believe that's the question you're asking me.
I'm asking who's excluded from
excluded.
This. Yeah, who's excluded?
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and Representative Hawes, those that would be excluded basically are those that wouldn't have a service connection disability rated high enough to be participate. That'd be the one, definitely. And the other ones primarily that didn't serve, again, in a hostile zone declared by the president.
Okay, and this
Representative
is,
Hawes.
I mean, this is a policy choice. Mm-hmm. So when we go to the two bills, you'll note that that is different in our bill. So I'm not asking you to amend, but I'm pointing out that as a difference. Co-Chair Severson, what's your opinion?
Mr. Chair,
I'd like to
Representative. Could I have Mr. Wilkson disqualify that statement perhaps a little more?
All right, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, my understanding of the current language in the delete all is that it mirrors the definition of a veteran of 181 days of service or as otherwise defined in Minnesota statute. That the 90 days in an active war zone is an additional qualifier, but anybody that has meets the state statutory definition of a veteran would be covered.
Representative Severson.
Mr. Chair, thanks. I think the question that really comes to the heart of this thing is, are our reserve forces and our National Guard forces intended to be included in this particular bill? And I want to check with Mr. Clear to see if there are any loopholes that we're missing here that would preclude them from being able to qualify for this benefit.
Mr. Cleary.
You see, Mr. Cleary, and...
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative Severson, I don't see any loopholes. You know, I'm looking at this awfully quickly. May I ask a question of my own along these
yes,
lines?
Yes, please. Please do.
If, with regard to the additional qualifier of the 90 days, that would show up on line 3.15,
right.
Going back to that, it appears that the two-year requirement has been dropped in this amendment.
That's right.
And I'm just wondering how that 3.14, that additional qualifier in 3.14 squares with the language on 4.9 and 4.10. I guess is an additional qualifier maybe I'm not so troubled because as an additional qualifier, yes, it has to be a veteran who served after that date, but it would be with the additional also the 90 days. I'm sorry, I was just a little slow to pick up on that.
Okay, thank you. Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess one of the other questions I had on this on the bill as it goes forward is that in the total amount of assistance eligible in section page 532, the amount of assistance for eligible person under paragraph B must not exceed the total cost of attendance at an eligible institution up to 128 credits, 8 semesters, whichever is greater. And I think the difference that is between the governor's bill and the attorney general's bill is I think we've set a target on that of $10,000 entitlement per individual and $2,000 per semester year, up to $3,000 per semester a year. And I was just wondering, how is that addressed in this particular bill?
Representative Leader.
Mr. Chair and Representative Severson, part of the problem was it depends on the individual veteran the courses he or she were in, and if they wanted to have accelerated, or they only had a shorter time frame to complete it, and that's why the $1,000 may not have covered that if they would have gone to some degree an accelerated carrying accelerated credits. But Mr. Wogland maybe could comment further.
Mr. Wogland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, when we look at the University of Minnesota, for instance, there is a charge of $291 per credit. And so when you're looking at the total cost per semester, let's say you're a full-time student, you're looking at tuition costs of $3,700 per semester. And that's not including any sort of administrative fees or any other fees that you might pay in connection with your actual classes or tuition. Under this proposal, it would be full tuition coverage, and so the caps, you know, if we look at a $1,000 cap, let's say per semester, what we're talking about for a full-time student is approximately one quarter of the course load. We're talking about maybe like a four-credit class at the University of Minnesota. This bill goes further in addressing the tuition needs of veterans, and that's why the $1,000 caps were, my understanding, why the $1,000 caps were removed through amendment in the Senate.
Okay. Representative Severson?
I think we'll be able to get to this when we present our bill, Mr. Chair. Appreciate it.
Representative Tremblay, did you have something to this point?
It's to the bill, but...
Representative,
Mr. Chair, what I want to know is what is a war zone? The president declared the war over after a few months, but it's still in going on. So, can you tell me what defines a war zone?
Mr. Cleary,
Mr. Chairman, and Representative Otremba, it's usually done by executive order, and it's usually pretty clear. It's usually very broad. Around Iraq, for example. So, for example, the current war zone defined by executive order, and it's a long-standing executive order, it gets amended occasionally to add another country or so, but it includes not only Iraq, but Iran, Kuwait, Turkmenistan, part of Turkey, Egypt, possibly Syria and Jordan, some of the countries along the Horn of North Africa. That's the current war zone. There are also zones of hostility or war zones in the Philippines right now, and possibly some other places I'm not familiar with. But it is by that executive order.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Okay. Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Leiter, I asked this question last week. Let's say a soldier enrolled or enlisted in Texas moves to Minnesota, joins the National Guard or the Army Reserve, and then is deployed. Does he qualify under this bill?
Representative
Lee. Mr. Chair and Representative Shumper, only if he's been a Minnesota resident 6 months prior to his entry into the military. In fact, there's two qualifications, one 6 months, and if he were in the enrolled in an educational institution, he would have to be a resident for 6 months. But if he just came in on his own and was not enrolled in an educational institution, he had to be a Minnesota resident for 1 year. I believe that's correct,
Mr. Wilber.
So actually, a guy moving in just couldn't come in and be eligible for this bill.
Mr. Chairman, I know many times we have soldiers that come off active duty. They come into Minnesota, they join the National Guard, Army Reserve. This is a big push in the active component, is when you come off active duty that you continue your service in the National Guard and Army Reserve. And many times, as soon as they join a Reserve or a National Guard unit, many times they're deployed. So basically they don't qualify under this bill. Am I correct?
Mr. Chair and Mr. Chumper.
Detmer.
Detmer.
Beg your pardon?
Representative Detmer.
Oh, I had the wrong name.
Go ahead. Representative Leader.
Actually, that's correct. They'd have to be a Minnesota resident prior to their enlistment in the Guard or Reserve to qualify under this program. They just couldn't move in. They could have been a Minnesota resident at the time of their enlistment and been living out of state. they would qualify. Mm-hmm. But they couldn't move in and qualify. They'd have to have these, either the 6 months if they were in an educational institution, or 1 year if they just moved in without being in an educational institution.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Severs, Representative Severson, or Representative Hollis, how did we actually amended the other bill, didn't we?
Representative Severson, or Representative Hollis.
Do I know? if Mr. Clary shakes his head, yes, we have. If he shakes his head, no, we have not. But we're going to.
I heard the rattle, Jim.
Hey, Mr. Chair, a little bit to that point. I think last year when we were pushing some of our veterans initiatives through, we identified an issue where we had out-state military people who were getting off of active duty who were not from Minnesota coming to Minnesota paying out-state tuition. The legislature overrode that and said anybody who is serving in the military comes to Minnesota as a veteran, and I think there was a time limit on that basically come in and they get in-state tuition for that particular. So that was part of that was taken care of last year. But as far as eligibility, I think you've identified a gap here where it basically says if they come to, and they're getting in-state tuition, then there should be probably a caveat that says if they're receiving in-state tuition, then they ought to be able to be eligible for that criteria. Of course, then that opens up the fiscal note on it as well, I think, because we are really targeting a Minnesota-based group here. So that's something that we as legislature have to really say, and I think there is merit to it because I think those are individuals that we want to draw to the state, and in the way of making Minnesota a more veteran-friendly state, that's another avenue that we can go down. It's just there are fiscal implications that come along with that.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Detmer.
You know, if we could, I would like to amend it to read that it would include those soldiers coming off active duty or coming in from another state that comes into Minnesota, serves, or joins an Army Reserve, National Guard, and then is mobilized. You know, we like to say we're an army of one, HUA, and we want to make sure that we keep that concept alive in Minnesota.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hawes.
I have one last question. Maybe I would like to direct it to staff and then... Oh, excuse me.
Oh, okay, Representative.
I mean, you just have to be more aggressive here. I'm sorry,
Representative Wardlaw.
No,
thank you, Mr. Chair. I have one question related to the previous question. My son was a Marine for 8 years, and he lived in Minnesota, went to school here, and he entered the Marine Corps, and then when he went to flight school, he became a Florida citizen. Because of the tax break he gets there as opposed to Minnesota. And he served in Iraq, and now he has a medical retirement. So he was, after 8 years, he's bounced out of the Marine Corps because of his medical condition. But since he's a resident of Florida, if he comes back to Minnesota to live again, does he qualify for this tuition?
Representative Leader.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Wardlaw, I think that's kind of a gray area. I think the concern that I would, and I don't have a problem with it, but I think the fiscal note would be pretty terrific, and I don't know, I think that's something we should analyze, because you could have a lot of basically retired veterans and non-Minnesota residents, basically not like your son so much, but that's an exception, but you could have a lot of non-Minnesota residents moving in to participate, and actually maybe that should be a federal thing. I don't know. I don't want to speak against it, but maybe Mr. Wolfsman, would you want to comment?
Mr. Wolfsman.
My understanding, thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative. My understanding is that under the current language of the bill, if you had been a resident for 6 months prior to your enlistment, then you would be covered under this.
Mr. Wolfsman, this is for a military retiree that had been a resident and not. He moved out of state and basically was a non-resident and come back in, and that's if that would qualify. I guess that's a question. Is that right, Representative Wardle?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. He lived here his whole life before he went into the Marine Corps, but he just joined Florida as a resident because of the tax conditions, but he does want to move back here.
Representative Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and Mr. Representative Wardle, would he qualify under the federal law?
Representative Wardlaw.
That's correct. He's going to school right now. It'll be a moot point because he's going to be done with his he's going for a second degree, and he's getting the GI Bill already, so he'll be done with his schooling before he comes back here, but it is a good example of
yeah.
something like that. Because a lot of people go to Florida for flight school, for instance, and they become a Florida resident because they don't pay taxes there. And I'm sure there's a lot of Minnesotans that have done the same thing.
Representative Leaders.
Mr. Chair, I think that's something we should have Mr. Clary. Could you pursue that and check on how that could be handled? And it's at wishes of the committee. I think it has fiscal implications perhaps in it. But basically, I can accept that or understand that because I live on a border next to where a large air base is, and they are actually in another state, and they're Minnesota residents. So we got that situation, too. And a lot of them retire in Minnesota, and a lot of them don't retire because of the tax situation. So we got a little problem.
Representative Detmer, is this something you would like to pursue today, or are you willing to work with Representative Leader and have to talk to Mr. Cleary about this as it moves on to the Finance Committee?
Mr. Chairman, I guess I should ask if Representative Leader is open to this amendment. Is this something that you would be agreed to, that we look into it and then see what the fiscal implications are? Would you agree to that amendment?
Representative Leader.
Mr. Chair, I don't have a problem with the amendment. I presume it could come on, and if we have some problems, it could come off in the process, too. And we certainly could take a look at it. Again, my concern is hopefully that we could even pass this bill with the fiscal note on it. And if we get a larger one, we may have some problems down the line. But, no, I don't have a problem with that. Mr. Chair,
Mr. Chairman, we'll work on this. I'm not going to do it now, but we'll work on this.
Okay, this bill will move further, so there's time to do that. Thank you. Mr. Cleary?
Well, Mr. Chairman, maybe I should leave sleeping dogs lie here, but just a point of clarification. If you look at lines 4.21 to 4.23, I believe that's where the bill talks about the need to be a resident within 6 months of the person's initial enlistment or any re-enlistment. I would interpret that 6 months as 6 months on either side.
So it becomes back.
6 months before, 6 months after. Okay. Let me just say, I believe that in response to Representative Wardlow's question about a person who was a Minnesota resident when he enlisted, is now out of the service living elsewhere, if that person comes back, I believe under this language that person would indeed clearly be eligible for this program. And I'm wondering, I know Representative Detmer is involved here, but I'm wondering if the language on 4.21 to 4.23 doesn't also cover that situation already. Because if somebody moves here from out of state who's not a, let's say he's coming off active duty or coming off civilian life, and he's not a Minnesota resident until he arrives, then he almost immediately is, and at that point joins the Minnesota National Guard or a reserve unit in Minnesota, even if it's a reenlistment on line 4.23, I believe that would be covered already. Now, maybe that language needs strengthening to make that real clear, but I believe that person would already be covered.
Yeah. Representative.
Mr. Chairman, let me read this. The person providing the, I'm on 4.21, a person providing the military service described in Clause 1, Items 1 to 4, was a Minnesota resident within 6 months of the time of the person initial enlistment or any re-enlistment in the United States Armed Forces. So that, if I interpret that right, that means if they were, say, in Texas, initial enlistment, came off active duty in Minnesota, then re-enlisted in the Army Reserve and or National Guard, he qualifies under this bill.
That's how I would interpret it, yes, sir.
Okay, yeah, that would satisfy me, yeah.
Okay. Anything further, Representative Leader?
Mr. Chair, that's something we certainly will look at. And as the bill moves, if a representative, are you on the full committee, may I ask?
Pardon?
Are you on the full committee that make, we would make sure we get it on?
No.
Or off, if you're on. Otherwise, we can meet with you other than that, too.
I'm not on the full committee.
Oh, okay. Then we'll have to make certain that you're aware of what goes on.
I appreciate it.
Okay. Representative Hodge.
My last point. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Mr. Representative, for being so patient with me as we work our way through. And it's really not the jockey on the horse that I'm worried about, but the horse itself. The bill really needs to be going through to serve our veterans, and that's what we have to keep our eye on. The last point was that, Mr. Clary, maybe you can help us with this also. Early in the bill, before the amendment on 1.12, was implying that the reserves, and especially the National Guard, are not part of the United States Armed Forces. Later on in the bill, it cleaned it up a little bit, but that language kind of stood out with me. But is that better now? It's better now, and I'm thankful.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, one thing I failed to say that I don't know if someone asked when if the benefits expire, but the benefits expire as you age, because then you come under new qualifications under Minnesota statutes, because you qualify as a senior and you can go to school under the free tuition senior. Is that correct, Mr. Clary? So they should be aware that you have benefits until you, if you can cease to desist becoming 60 or 65 as a senior, you're okay.
Okay. Anything further from members? Okay. I should ask, does anybody else in the audience want to make comments on the bill?
Good morning.
Good morning. Identify yourself for the record.
My name is Clark Dyrud, Commissioner of Veterans Affairs, and I will let the director introduce herself.
Mr. Chair, my name is Susan Hegart. I'm the director of the Minnesota Office of Higher Education.
And what we just
welcome to the committee.
We wanted to clarify one thing that was mentioned at the outset by Mr. Wolfsland. We, as a Department of Veterans Affairs, and I will let her, her agency, have not been working on this amendment. So this is kind of a surprise to us. We have obviously been working on the second bill that is being introduced this morning. So I just wanted to clarify that we the first that I knew of anything as a department was last Thursday in the Senate amendment. So we have been approached by the senators and the Senate staff about, amendments. But we have not, as an agency, been speaking to this. We've worked on a GI Bill version. In fact, many of you in the room have been working on GI Bill issues since last summer. So, I mean, that's in the open. And we have many members of service organizations. We have Commander's Task Force people present. We have United Veterans Legislative Council people. I'm probably missing, several individual organizations represented. So they are very familiar with a version of the Minnesota GI Bill, which is to be advanced. So on the one hand, I want to personally recognize Representative Leader for interest in this issue, and it's not the matter of a secondary bill. I just want to clarify that we have not had a chance to look at this or to look at the the details of this. So I just wanted to clarify that.
Okay, Commissioner Dyrud, it's our intention here to move both bills.
Yes,
and it's sure not your involvement in it won't stop here right now today. So
yes, Chair, but I just wanted to clarify that point.
Sure, thank you.
Mr. Chair, We did, though, want to, we're thankful, and it's a good thing that a number of the provisions from the bill that we've been working on are included in Representative Leader's bill. And as Commissioner Dyrd said, you know, we were not consulted, so I haven't really had time to look through. We've been trying to do this up in the chairs here, but we really need a little more time to fully understand the impact of some of the provisions of the bill, but a number have been adopted. I just want to highlight a couple of things. And then Mr. Med, who's with me, we've handed some spreadsheets out. We've run through these many, many times. But this, he'll walk you through these sheets. But first, I think the point that I wanted to mention is on page 2 of the bill, line 2.19, which is the cost of attendance. That is different from the bill draft that we worked on. The cost of attendance could fluctuate unless it's pinned to the state grant program, and that was how we set it up in our bill. Right. If you use the budget in the state grant program, it will allow this not to fluctuate so much and keep the fiscal costs more constant. We are concerned at the exclusion of the private institutions. We think that needs to be explicit. The federal GI Bill is open. These veterans ought to be able to choose where they want to attend school. And the grant budget allows the student to choose whatever school they want to attend, the veteran to choose the school. They're limited on how much it'll pay, but they at least can have a choice. And we think that's critical for these individuals who've served our country. Another point on page 4 that Mr. Med will talk about in a little bit greater detail is the residency question. There are some conflicting provisions in our mind. And then the biggest point, I think, Mr. Chair, is we want to be generous. We want to reward these folks for serving their country, and many of them for years. At the same time, though, we are living with a limited budget. And there are other pressing needs also that are competing in state government. So we need to go back and do a fiscal note, and we're working on that right now on this bill. The lifting of the cap to the University of Minnesota amount will increase the cost of this bill, we believe, substantially. And we are the folks administering the program. Then finally, I would just note on the back page that I think this was in our bill too, but we are concerned about $25,000 to administer the program. We'd advocated for a little bit more revenue. It's not only for a staff person's time, but also we have to reconfigure some of our computer systems to be able to handle these new grantees. And so that is a concern that we have as well. But I'd like Mr. Med, who is a veteran and works as an auditor with our agency, to speak more specifically to a couple provisions and then walk you quickly, if there's time, through this sheet. I think you'd find it of interest.
Welcome to the committee, and identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, sir. My name is Tim Med. I'm with the Minnesota Office of Higher Education.
See, before you continue, we're halfway through our committee time, and this isn't a finance committee, and I don't want to cut you off. I mean, it's a good view for this committee, but if you could make your presentation get to the point and move it along. Thank you. Appreciate that.
I will. Thank you. I wanted to speak to the residency issue on 4.21 to 4.25. There's actually two definitions. It says the veteran must reside within Minnesota for 6 months at the time of their initial enlistment. But it also says the person receiving the educational assistance is a Minnesota resident as defined in 136A.101 subdivision 8. And for Representative Wardgo's son, he would actually have to move back to Minnesota and live here for a year. But then he would be qualified under the way I read this bill, which the chart I constructed on your table, I'll just quickly go through the U of M. I constructed this because Susan asked me what are veterans eligible for, and I said stuff. So I had to research what that stuff was. At the University of Minnesota, and this is using the state grant budget for a semester, we estimate the cost is $7,580. A veteran with 2 years of service will have an unmet need after the GI Bill of $3,651. if he or she is ineligible for a Pell or state grant, that would be the amount given under this bill. If they receive the maximum Pell and state grant, they would have an unmet need of zero. A veteran who has no GI eligibility, and there are those that will meet this criteria, would have an unmet need, and that would be the column in the far right, would have an unmet need of $7,580 a semester. And if they were ineligible for Pell or state grant, that would be their eligibility. If I was inclined to go back to the University of Minnesota, I would be receiving $7,580 a semester under this bill because I am not eligible for GI Bill benefits and I already have a bachelor's degree and not eligible for Pell and the state grant.
Representative Severs.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, to that point, I think one of the things that the committee needs to keep in mind here is this is part of an overall package that was put forth by the governor and by the Attorney General. The Attorney General did not address a lot of the other issues that we're trying to put together in a package that doesn't just speak to the GI Bill but speaks to veterans' benefits across the board. That package came to $74,800,000. With this particular bill, the way it's written right now, it would substantially increase that. And my concern with the Attorney General's office when they came to my office was that we've got a lot of bricks on this camel. It doesn't take much to break the camel's back at this point. And I think you've just heard a classic example of why the lack of restraint in a particular bill like this, and this is not to be mean-spirited to veterans, and I don't think anybody here wants to do that, but as was stated, there needs to be some fiscal restraint in this whole process. And I think the provision that says that the last dollar in, that there's $1,000 per semester and $2,000 or $3,000 per year for 5 years for $10,000 gives us some type of fiscal grasp on this process. The way it's written right now, I would say we have no way of doing a fiscal note because we don't know how those individuals are going to qualify. And if you're talking about $7,000 per student, that fund is rapidly going to be depleted. So I've got serious concerns about this particular provision. If this can be cleaned up as it goes through, I think we've got promise here. But otherwise, I think it will be the brick that breaks the camel's back on the entire veterans package, which I do not want to see. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, anything further? Representative Oschlager.
Chair, members, I mean, in looking at the bill summary, isn't there there's a maximum amount of $10,000 total, correct?
That's not in the bill.
It's in the bill.
Oh, that's no, okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you for the clarification.
That's it? Thank you. Anything to finish up, Representative Leader?
Mr. Chair, I'd just like to clarify something. Public or private institutions are eligible under this. That didn't cut them out as the person from higher ed. They could participate just as any other public University of Minnesota institution is, and I don't know where that comment came from. But certainly, and that's the point I make, we've got a problem here where you want to cut it off. The fiscal note is a big thing, and we're dealing with veterans' issues, and that's why I say it's up to the will of the committee. But we did make those adjustments because of some of the problems that were concerned when both of them were put together, and that's what we've got to resolve.
Okay. Representative Wolfsager.
Chair, members, Representative Leader, are you open to putting a maximum amount of $10,000 back into the bill or some provision like that to limit?
Representative Leader.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wolfsager, I don't have a problem with anything. We'd like to pass the bill, and I think the problem was we were concerned about some individual veterans that had cost in exceeding $1,000 per semester. That was it. Yeah, and that's why we actually took the cap off, because you're going to hit a certain amount of veterans that definitely will have more costs than $10,000. And again, that's a decision of the committee to make, because that's what we want to determine. Just what benefit limits are you going to put in for veterans?
We need to move along here for time. There's another important bill to hear, and I understand there are quite a few people, and some have driven quite a ways to testify today. So this bill, as it moves along, if you have concerns or need to talk to Representative Leader about that, do that before it gets to the next committee. Representative Doty, will you renew your motion?
Mr. Chair, I renew my motion that we move Bill 533 as amended. We pass the bill and refer it to the Finance Committee.
Okay. Any just for clarification, it does go to this is a division, so it actually goes to Ag, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs Division, and from there it'll go to Finance. But okay, any further discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Bill passes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Okay, next bill up on the agenda, House File 162.
Let's do it.
Representative Hawes and Representative Severson. Representative Hawes, would you like to move your bill to get it before the committee?
I would like to move House File 162 for your approval and to move to Finance, Veterans Finance, after our hearing.
Okay. Do you have any author's amendments?
We do not.
Okay.
I would like to, would you like me to speak to the bill?
Yes, go ahead and explain the bill.
I think we've heard a lot of discussion about both bills because we were integrating our thoughts on those bills. Let me tell you about the evolution of House File 162, however. House File 162 has been worked on a year, or it has been worked on for the last 2 years by Veterans Affairs, MNSQ, Minnesota Office of Higher Ed, the governor's office, and an ad hoc committee called MAG, which has 15 different agencies serving on that committee. This is a mature bill with lack of hooks in it. So as these bills go together, the closer the previous bill gets to House File 162, the healthier it will be. I do believe that you're not needing to know about finances, but I have to say something about finances just to show the maturity. I think this bill will come within the $30 million budget. If it does do that, it does it in a mature manner. If you take a bill that is $50 million and you start plucking the little feathers out of it, we're not too sure what's going to be underneath and what the chicken is going to look like. This is a very mature bill. And again, it's not about the jockey. It's about the horse. And this is a very good horse. And as these bills come together, I hope they look very similar in the stable. Mr. Severson is the co-chair of this, and he has gifts today. And I think we would really like to hear from them. I have to point out, you know, when you drive down from Bemidji, you're a hero to hear this. And my friends here driving up from St. Cloud. But my friend back here, Martin Nyer, came in on a bus last night to be at this meeting and will go home on a bus this evening. And that is really a veteran that we should salute. He also has been very active in stand down, and he is a combat veteran of World War II and the Korean War, and he came to listen, not to testify, and took that energy to do so. Mr. Severson.
Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. And I think we've had a lot of good discussion on this bill so far. A couple of things I wanted to delineate in this, and part of this was precipitated by the Wisconsin GI Bill that they passed through last year. And it was more substance, or it was more fluff than it was substance, as it was. They had opened up the borders basically to veterans to say, if you come in here, we'll give you free tuition. They did not fund their educational institutions to do that. And basically what they didn't say was, this was the last dollar in. When you use all your other entitlements, then we will kick in. That's the focus of this particular bill. And just a little background, additional background for our reserve forces, particularly for our Army, Navy, and Marine Corps Reserve, Air Force Reserve, when they sign up for an enlistment and they get the Montgomery GI Bill, they have to stay in an active status in order to be eligible for the educational benefits. The problem we've been running into on the federal side is that when their enlistment runs out and they are no longer eligible for that college tuition. And so there is a resolution that we put forth in the House that basically petitions Congress to change that. They're using it as a recruitment tool. It's not right. It's being disingenuous because we're saying that, you know, if you join up and you get deployed, that you're going to get those educational benefits, and then they're pulling them back. That's not true for the active side. They have 14 years to use those educational benefits. We're trying to fix that on the federal level. This bill goes towards helping some of that issue. When veterans come back, they have they get the Montgomery GI Bill, which is about $1,200 a month, and that's not enough to make tuition, books, and live on. So this the Minnesota GI Bill is basically our effort at saying, you know what, we care about you, we want you to help you out going to school, but we have some fiscal restraints, as I mentioned in the comments. This is part of an entire package, and we'd love it to be more, but the problem is we do have fiscal constraints on this. And so with that in mind, we'd like to bring some testifiers forward and speak to the bill, Mr. Chair.
Identify yourself and who you represent for the record, please. Yes.
My name is John Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is John Winter. I'm one of the parents of one of the soldiers that is in the 2/136th Battalion with the Red Bull unit.
Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, I'm Sally Jarenson. I also have a son that is in the 136th Red Bull unit in Bemidji.
Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tony Peck, and my husband is serving with the 2 of the 1-6 Combined Arms Battalion based out of Bemidji.
Welcome to the committee.
Yeah, thank you for having us, too, and we'd like to thank you very much for your sincerity and concern for our soldiers and looking at this type of bill, and we hope it passes. We hope you all support it. Seems like you are. And so thank you very much for that. And I'd also like to mention, we've had the opportunity to work with your staff. We're just civilians. We're just parents. And your staff have shown so much concern, sincerity, and feeling. So I just want to make you aware of that, too. We did hand a few items out. Basically, we didn't know if we were going to testify, so we have a statement there. And we also would propose a resolution that you might look at to carry this further to actually the congressional delegation, because this impact on us is more than the state. The state, we realize, can only do so much. And the problem that we're confronting with is that we do not qualify for the Montgomery GI Bill, which is this right here. And I want to we also have an article that was a editorial from one of the soldiers right over there that also explains their feelings of being a soldier and yet not recognized equally as a regular soldier. And I just want to kind of, we decided we'd just kind of put heart to this and explain our feelings in respect to our own sons or daughters that are there. My son, I've served, my family served, my oldest son was in Bosnia, both of my sons were in Bosnia, and my youngest now is still in the Guard and is in Iraq. So to give you an idea, he joined when he was a senior, probably dedication to the family and our feelings of military. And basically, my son joined, and he had a six-year commitment. Right out of high school, he went on his 6 months of active duty, came back, had some time, but not enough to get into school. Then was deployed to Bosnia. He took a year and a half of his life, went to Bosnia with his brother. It was a nice experience for them. They came back very united. He put a year of school in, and now has been in Iraq, and it will be extended and to a point of a year and basically almost 11 months. To qualify for the Montgomery bill, just so you understand, it requires 24 months of continuous duty. My son has served four and almost 4.5 years of active duty. He was unable to take advantage of the National Guard school education benefits because simply he hasn't been here. We haven't seen him. I pray to God I can see him someday alive and well. I think you have to realize the benefit that they give to you, and we deserve to give them the benefits back. I realize I were here to thank you because you are taking some action. We appreciate your dedication and feelings, and we would really love to see you push it forward into the congressional delegation to actually get them a fair shake. And I'll turn it over to Sally.
Ms. Jarnson, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, my son has been in the National Guard for 3.5 years, and in those 3.5 years, he's not been able to attend one day of schooling. Right now, I'm in the process of trying to get him signed up to attend BSU. He is so active over there, roaming from one place to the other, he does not have time to do it. He is a 24/7 soldier. And it's been real hard to have him extended. He's my only son. And, excuse me. I'm just trying to get him so he can get into school. And they're being told that within a year, around 2008, they'll probably be extended or to go again, deployed again. That means that he will only get 1 year of schooling. By the time he gets back from that, he will be done, and he will not get the GI Bill benefits. So he will not have any benefit for schooling except for 1 year. And I'm just thankful that you people have taken the time to look out for these guys. You know, and I try to send everything that I can to them so they know. I'm in the process of trying to help five other soldiers get enrolled in BSU, so when they get back in August, and school starts August 20th, they're ready to go. It's a process, but it's nice to see that there's somebody looking out for them also besides us. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Garrison. Ms. Grove?
It's Peck.
Oh, Peck. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm here today to testify for you about this very important bill, and I'm here at the risk of actually losing my job. I am a judicial law clerk, and per judicial branch policies, I'm not allowed to engage in any kind of political activity on or off the clock. So if you have issues with that, come see me about House File 322 when you're done with the hearing today. We can talk more about that. To provide you with a little bit of family background, this August, when my husband is scheduled to come home, we will celebrate our 6th wedding anniversary. And of those 6 years, we will have spent nearly 3 years of them separated while my husband is deployed to or training for overseas active duty missions. We have an 11-month-old son, and Dad has been home with his son a glorious 22 days throughout his life. My husband joined the Guards directly out of high school and was separated from the Guards and rejoined in April of 2003 when he found out that his former brothers-in-arms and still considered his brothers-in-arms were deployed to Bosnia. And he went with as part of what was then Charlie Company of the 2136 Infantry out of Bemidji. He was in Bosnia or training for and in Bosnia from July of 2003 until April of 2004. He came home. He was told, you have 2 years, you won't be redeployed again. Well, lo and behold, a year later, they say, we need you to go to Iraq now. And so he voluntarily waives his 2-year limitation and goes to Iraq with his brothers in arms and now will be there for a total of 22 months. When he joined the Guards, he signed a 6-year enlistment, and he was all but promised a college education. They said, don't worry, even if you get deployed, you'll be able to finish your degree while you're still drilling with the within the National Guard. And when he comes back, his enlistment expires in April of 2008, so essentially he could get 1 year of
tuition assistance in while as an active duty drilling member. Had my husband spent those 33 months in the regular Army or the active duty service, he would qualify for the Montgomery GI Bill, or actually if he went up to 3 years, and that would yield him approximately $1,034 a month in GI Bill, federal GI Bill benefits, plus any Department of Defense kicker dollars as well. And not to step on Representative Severson's toes, but there's some different qualifications, but he could use those essentially after he separates from active duty service for almost up to 10 years. When he leaves the Guard, he's not eligible for a lot of those federal benefits. Right now, he could get the Minnesota or the Montgomery GI Bill Select Reserve component, but that would only give him $297 a month as opposed to the over $1,000 he could get if he had been on active duty continuously. He's eligible for what are called REAP benefits, which are specifically designed for reservists who are deployed for more than 90 days, but that is tied to being in active drilling status, and so when he comes home, he will no longer be in that status and won't qualify for those benefits anymore. And even if he was to qualify for them, it would only be $620 a month, still $400 short of the GI Bill benefits he could have got had he been on continuous active duty service. I remind you that he was part of the 125-day extension, and these men and women of our Guard are serving one of the longest, if not the longest, deployment in the history of the modern military. And I think it's important that Minnesota step up for these vets and backfill the federal deficiencies that our troops are suffering because of the lengthy deployments that the Guard is now being called upon for the federal service. And I think this committee's responsibility is to give this bill an upvote and then go out and educate and inform your colleagues of the substantial discrepancies that and inequities that are imposed on the Guard because of the antiquated National Guard benefiting structure and reservist structure, and to gain their support for the bills of these as well. I think what is really important to remember is that we need to honor the promise of a college education that was made to many of these, to every one of these men and women when they enlisted in the Guards, as my husband was included, and when they signed their contracts. Thank you.
Okay, any questions or comments from members? Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is not a question, but it's a comment. Both Representative Severson and I have sons over in Iraq. Both my sons, twin sons, have been over there. One is on a second tour. And we will do everything we can to support our troops and make things happen. And I'll be speaking up in Bemidji tomorrow at the Bemidji State University. So I'll keep these young men in our prayers up there.
Thank you. We'll be there to support you, too. Thank you.
Okay. Anything further from members? Representative Tinglestad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate these families coming forward to tell us about their situations. And, you know, I think especially what Ms. Peck pointed out with sort of the antiquated laws that we have here regarding the National Guard. And really prior to this war, you know, somebody could serve in the National Guard for 20 years and never have deployment. And so I think when a lot of the laws were put into place, we never expected a situation like this. And we are happy to update our laws here to adjust them to what's going on right now. And, you know, we want to show our appreciation to those soldiers that are deployed. And so we appreciate you coming forward here. And I think today, members, it's really, so we appreciate you coming forward here. And I think today, members, it's really pointed out how this war affects the families. You know, we do things on behalf of the soldiers and those deployed, but really it's the families that put in a lot, too, and I just want to give my special appreciation to you for coming forward today and helping us with this. Thank you.
Anything further, members? Representative Wardlaw.
I want to thank you also. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for stepping forward. And Ms. Beck, your testimony was full of facts and figures that I wish the feds would pay attention to more so than they have. And I agree, it's a lot harder to be the parent of a son in combat than it is to be there. It's because the one that's there is doing something about taking care of himself. The ones that are home, all they can do is worry, and then they can do nothing. So thank you for persevering.
anything else, members? Representative Dominguez.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also just want to thank you for coming and taking your time to come to the committee here. I have a son that served twice in Iraq, and they wanted him to up again. He's a sergeant now in the Marine Corps in communications, and he's thinking about it. But he's taking a big thought about, you know, his education also. So I know where you're coming from, because we had some long discussions about, you know, his education and the process that he wants to go on. But he's still in the service. He's still in the Marine Corps. Hopefully that he'll make a good choice, and I'm sure he will. It's going to be up to them. But I can sympathize with what you're talking about. We need to do better for our country as it is. And if we don't help our veterans or our military in general, we're going to have a hard time. So thanks again.
Okay, anything further, members? All right, I want to thank all three of you for taking the time and the long drive down. I don't know when you slept, but
you.
Your words are important to the committee, and we appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay. Are there further testifiers? Commissioner Dyrick.
Chair Coonan. Clark Dyer, Department of Veterans Affairs. I know time is short. I just want to hit a couple of points, summarize. I've been working on this many agencies, many individuals, many lawmakers have been working on this for a long time. Some of the high points that maybe haven't been discussed yet is in the state of Minnesota has an awful lot of financial aid through higher ed, through other programs. There's a lot of state aid for veterans that they don't know it exists. They don't even know that they qualify. Part of the GI Bill here would, for Minnesota GI Bill, would be working through the financial aid offices so that a veteran, in order to qualify for the Minnesota GI Bill, would become aware of, obviously, Pell Grants, federal, but also state. And it is geared to that end. There has been a cap put in, again, to prepare a fiscal note, with the one fact that we know for sure, and this, by the way, is the only sure fact, is that there are 5,000 people currently drawing the Minnesota, I mean, I'm sorry, the federal GI Bill. That's 5,000 people. We know that, you know, these people have less than 10 years of active duty to qualify. We know that we use that as a starting point. We are assuming roughly 7,000 people. You include the severely disabled, the total and complete disabled veterans, the spouses and children of the disabled veterans. And so that is the rationale for putting a cap on the dollar amount. But I also, I just would be remiss, I feel so sorry for the testimony that I just heard. That is a problem, and that is a federal problem to be addressed. And I'm just very frustrated. As a veteran and as an advocate for veterans in the state of Minnesota, it's extremely frustrating. And I would like to continue to talk about that through the federal level. That's really oversight. So I just wanted to touch on a couple of points. Much of the rest has been discussed. So in the interest of time, are there any questions? Or I will turn it over.
Okay.
Chair.
Any questions or comments from members for Commissioner Dyer? Okay.
Chair, and I just would like to recognize Bernie Leader as the last remaining World War II veteran serving in our up here at the Capitol, World War II combat veteran. I have such respect for him, and I just want to point that out.
Well, thank you, Commissioner David. Representative Hawes, anything further?
Thank you very much. If you don't mind, Mr. Chair, I would like to yield to Mr. Severson, and then I'll do a very short wrap.
Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And I think a couple of things that you've heard today, particularly by the testifiers, is there's some concern about the eligibility for tuition reimbursement Minnesota, and we as a legislature, 2 years ago, we enacted a policy that basically said when you get out, you have day for day. I think it was 2-for-1 that we actually said for if you've been on active duty for a year, you have 2 years to use your Minnesota educational benefits. Those carry through even though you are no longer enlisted in the National Guard. So Minnesota's gone a long way in making sure that we are fulfilling our obligations to our military people. So a lot of these individuals who are going to stop their enlistment on the military side for the National Guard in Minnesota will still have those educational benefits for a couple to 3 years, 4 years after they have stopped their enlistment, so they can't be recalled because they're no longer enlisted. That's not the case with the federal program, which we are talking about today, and that was really brought to my attention by Mr. Cleary, that we have some major problems with that process. Last year, the Congress failed. It was brought before the Congress as an issue. The leaders in the military at that point basically said it's a recruiting tool. It's not an issue. It is an issue. It's an issue of integrity. It's an issue of telling people we're going to do something and that, then not doing it. I think what we need to do is to address the congressional side, and we're working on doing that to make sure that the federal benefits that they should be entitled to, that they were told they were entitled to, get into place. So I want to say that this is an additional program for the GI Bill to help the students who have the other funding available to give them that last bump to try and make it easier for them as they go through school. I think it's a good bill. It's got some fiscal targets on it. If we are willing to bump that up, I'm fine with that. But again, as I said, this is part of a much larger package for all the veterans across the board. And I would hate to jeopardize that entire package by just focusing on one particular issue that could bring the whole thing down. So thank you, members, for your good questions and for the discussion today.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hawes.
Thank you very much. I would like to say that House File 162 is a mature bill. It's been developed over the last year and the last 2 years. It's been developed by the Veterans Affairs, MNSQ, Minnesota Office of Higher Ed, and a MAG, an ad hoc committee of over 15 different associations and agencies of veterans service. It is built to meet the total package. It's built so that it works. You do have to be fearful of Mr. Severson's brick to the camel's back and ending up with a bill that will be reduced and reduced to where it does not meet the original targets of this effort. I beg of the people going forward in leadership to bring these two bills together to have a bill that serves the heroes that we want to serve through the GI Bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Engelstad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Haas, Representative Severson, thank you for your hard work on this issue. And Representative Haas, I especially appreciate your final comment about bringing the two bills together, because I'm just thinking about, as we're taking action in committee today, it's fairly unusual that there's two bills that are similar and both bills are going forward in committee. But I think that is a strong message that, you know, we want to keep our veterans, our soldiers in the forefront on all of this and put together the best package rather than worrying about any kind of partisan issues or anything like that. So I think that united message is really a strong message that we'd like to send today. So thank you to both of you for all your hard work.
Representative, again, as I said before, it's not the jockey, it's the horse that we got to be concerned about. Thank you.
Well, thank you, and those are good points. The important thing here are the servicemen and women and the veterans, and it's not the politics, Democrat or Republican. Representative Hawes, would you like to renew your motion?
I would renew the motion for House File 162 to forward it to the Finance Committee for Veterans.
Okay, Representative Hawes renews his motion to pass House File 162. It'll actually go to Ag, Rural Economies, Veterans Affairs Policy, and then be referred to the Finance Committee. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Bill passes. Any other business, committee members? Before we adjourn, I would like to recognize and thank all the veterans in the room today. So, meeting adjourned.